So in the 10th verse, the Lord says that I am the one in my presence, in Maya Adhyakshena Prakriti. This nature, this Prakriti creates this whole world in my presence, because the Lord is the one that gives the power himself. He or she does, the Lord does not do anything. As the consciousness, it supports the whole world of objects. But the Lord himself does not do anything. Lord provides the energy, and in the presence of that energy, the Prakriti can create. Just as electricity itself does not heat the room or cool the room, electricity provides the energy, and in the presence of the energy, the heater will heat the room, the air conditioner will cool the room, the fan will rotate. The gasoline does not move from one place to another, but in the presence of gasoline, the car, the tires will move and the car will move. So same way he says, I provide the energy with which this whole world is created, and Jagat viparivartate, and the world rotates, the world moves. So then in the 11th verse, we ask the question, if the Lord is the one providing the energy, everything we have is from him, he alone is there in this whole world, everything, my whole body is made up of that same consciousness, the whole, you know, this space, air, space, water, fire, ground, everything is that one consciousness alone, then why is there so much corruption? Why is there so much sorrow? Why are people so dishonest? Why, you know, why is not all the world divine and beautiful? Because we have heard that he is all beautiful, all wondrous, all divine, all sweet. All good qualities represent the Lord. And so why are that not happening? Why is there so much killing and so much murder and so much torture? So he says, because people do not, even having heard it, they do not really know it. We have read, you know, we have read in the Gita, we have read in the Bible, we have read in the Quran, we have read in, you know, Guru Granth Sahib, we have read in all the scriptures, all the saints and prophets have come and told us. But why don't we practice? Why is not it coming into practice? So we'll read the verse number 11 and 12. We'll do the 11 and 12 today. That will tell us why the people are the way they are. Verse 11, 9th chapter. Avajananti mam murdhaha. Manushim tanum ashritam. Param bhavam janantaha. Mama bhuta maheshwaram. So mam here, the Lord is talking about himself, not only as Krishna, the divine blue boy of Vrindavan, but the consciousness, the Lord that is everywhere in all beings. And that Lord, he says, me, that consciousness, avajananti, they do not know me. Avajananti, they do not know me correctly. Jananti means no, avajananti means do not know me correctly, in a wrong way. And he calls us mudha. He calls us stupid. He calls us fools. So he uses very strong language that people, even though they have heard the truth, if they are not able to practice, then what would you call them? You know, you would call him stupid. Like a person reads medicine, he knows, he passes the exams. But then when he comes time to see a patient, you know, he doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know how to diagnose, doesn't know what medicine to give. A pharmacist, you know, he has studied pharmacy, but then when he's, you know, dispensing prescriptions, he gives the wrong medicine to the wrong patient, you would call him a mudha. You would call him a foolish person. So he says these people, he calls them as foolish. Why? Because they think of me, consciousness, as manushim tanum ashritam. Manushim means human, tanum means body, ashritam. This consciousness is residing in our body. The Lord is residing in our body. But they think of me as this body. This body I am, that is all they think. So that is why he says these people are foolish. Why? Param bhavam ajanantaha. Janantaha means no. Ajanantaha means do not know. Param bhavam, they do not know my higher nature. Param means higher. Bhavam means nature. They do not know my higher nature as what? As mama, as my higher nature, they do not know. Because who am I? The Lord says, I am Bhutam, Bhuta Maheshwaram. Bhuta means beings, Maheshwar. Ishwar means God. I am the great divine consciousness, the great Lord of this whole universe, of all Bhutas, all beings, whether animals, birds, plants, fish, even the rocks, the stones. I am the Lord. I am the great Lord. So this shloka can be read in three different ways. Actually, in many ways, but three aspects we can talk about. So one way is to look at it as the Lord of the universe. You know, he appeared as Krishna. Or he appeared in Jerusalem as Jesus. Now you might say, that is an ordinary man just walking. Krishna was man like you and me. He was walking on earth. He was walking on two legs. He had two eyes. You can say Jesus, he was an ordinary man. He was walking. But these were not ordinary people. These were special people. When Krishna appeared on earth, there were so many miracles. You know, he was born in a prison. The prison door opened. And his father was walking, taking him to a different part, as you know the story, because he was born in a prison. He had to be taken out because his uncle was going to kill him. And the river parted and his father could walk across. And all those things happened when Jesus was born. You know, the star was in the sky and then the wise men came, you know, looking because they had heard that there is some special being that is going to be born. So, and then they performed so many miracles in their life. You look at Jesus' life or Krishna's life or all these great prophets and saints. When they appeared on earth, they were special people. They were not like you and me. You know, they were an incarnation of God. And so to disregard, say, this is useless. It's just given a message. It doesn't mean anything. And it's like saying the Bible, it's okay, it's just another book. You know, it's like reading any other book, like reading history and science. No. These are special messages of God brought by special messengers of God. So God himself appeared on earth and gave us this message. So to think that he was a nothing, you know. And a lot of people say that. They say, how do you know Krishna was God? What is the proof? I mean, that way you can say, how do you know there is God? You know, people, there are so many people who say, there is no God. This is all bakwas, all these, some of these sadhus, you know, they have made up this nonsense so that we may go worship them and touch their feet. And so they have created this. That's why Marx used to say, you know, religion is opium for the masses. You know, the masses don't know what they're talking about. So this is an opium just to keep them quiet so that they don't misbehave, they don't create problems. So that's why he says these people are mudha. These people are foolish who don't understand that this knowledge is the highest knowledge and given by the Lord himself. So that is one way of looking at it, that this knowledge has to be respected, has to be understood, and then has to be applied. Like Pankaj said a couple of weeks ago, that you first listen to the teacher, then you go home and think about it, and then you apply that knowledge. You read it in the scriptures and apply it. So one who doesn't do that, according to the Lord, is a mudha, is a fool, he's stupid. The other way to look at it, as Swamiji also tells in his green book in the commentary, is that when we do idol worship, you know, when people worship the idol, and then they say, oh, this is God, and then they worship it, and that is good. There is nothing wrong with that. But then other people come and say, what are you worshiping? That piece of stone, that's not God, it's just a piece of stone. Or a picture, you know, we have pictures of gods and goddesses here, we have a statue. And you say, yeah, you're just idol worshippers. You know, they are just wasting your time. Go worship God outside. Go serve him in the people. So just to criticize somebody and call them idol worshipper is also because when we worship the idol, we do not say that the idol is God. First of all, if you say God is everywhere, right? God is everywhere. He's there in the poor people. He's there in the suffering, and you need to serve them. Yeah, that is true. God is everywhere. If God is everywhere, he's also in that idol, right? If he's there in the space, if he's there in sun and moon, if he's there in us as the life, then he's also in the idol. So that is number one. If we say God is everywhere, then he is everywhere, including that idol. He's equally there. We're not saying that he's more in that idol and less in that rock. No, he's everywhere equal. But what happens is that when you take a particular object and worship it as a manifestation of the Lord. And they say by constant remembrance and worship of the Lord, in that object, you as if invite His presence. So that's why when we start the prayers, if you've done any Hindu puja, the Lord is there in the form of a statue, and the Pandit who is performing, you know, like Ramesh Shastriji or, you know, Ashokji or whoever, when they do the puja, they say, Avahayami, I invite the Lord. So they invite the Lord to come in that little stone statue, that please be with us for the time of the puja. So when you're inviting the Lord, what you're doing is you're inviting His power in that particular object, in that particular statue, in that particular symbol. And symbolism is, we practice everywhere. You might say, well, other faiths don't worship idols, you know, that there is no idol worship in them. But if you think about it, all faiths do have an idol. You go to a Christian church and you have a statue of Jesus on the cross. And what is that? That is a symbol that represents His sacrifice. The Lord Himself came in the form of Jesus. Or you see the beautiful statues of Mother Mary with that beautiful baby Jesus in her hand. Or you see those, you know, the three wise men and Jesus on the manger and all. You know, at Christmas time, they have all those displays. So they are also idols. Because what happens is, for a human mind, it is very difficult for us to contemplate on a formless consciousness. They say, what is God? He is formless. He cannot be described. He cannot be shown. And which is true. You know, somebody will say, can you show me God? No, I cannot show you God, but the fact that I'm speaking, that means God is here. If God was not in me, I would not be speaking. All of you would not be listening. My finger is moving. Why? Because of God. But we say, oh, but can you describe Him? Can you show Him? No, I cannot describe Him. I cannot show Him because he's all pervading. He's formless. He doesn't have a particular form. He doesn't have a particular shape. He has no color, no qualities. Nothing can describe Him. The Gita cannot describe Him. The Bible cannot describe Him. The Guru Granth Sahib cannot describe Him. None of the scriptures can adequately describe Him. So in His infinite mercy and compassion, He has given us these various forms. So when I see a beautiful statue of Krishna playing the flute, or Shiva sitting in meditation, or Mother Durga going on her tiger, or when I see Jesus on the cross, or when I see a, you know, beautiful statue of Buddha, it reminds me of that divine consciousness. So it is to remind us, it is to show us that the idol represents. So the idol represents the ideal. The symbol represents that total consciousness. It's like when you see the national flag, right? The national flag, everybody gets up and salutes, and you know. But somebody will come and say, this is just the stars and stripes, is a piece of cloth. You know, throw it on the ground and spit on it. It's just a lousy piece of cloth. They say, no. If you do that, I'll kill you. You know, people get very upset. Why? Because that flag represents my great country, represents the United States of America. The flag is not the United States of America. Flag is just a piece of cloth. But that piece of cloth has great symbolism, has great meaning. Why? Because the moment I see the flag, I know this represents the USA, and I have to respect the flag. That's why when people were burning the flag, you know, there was so much opposition. Or in India, you go, you see the three colors, you know, orange, white, and green with that circle. This is our national flag. It represents the Republic of India. So the symbol itself is not God, but it represents God. And people don't misunderstand it. There are certain faiths in India also who say, there should be no idols, you know, and they should destroy the idols. People who worship idols are fools. But then the same people, they worship the fire. They will light a fire and do yajnas, and they will offer and say, Om Bhur Bhava Swaha, and offer grains to that fire. And you ask him, who is that fire? That is God. So they worship fire as God, but they say, no, you should break all the idols. So it doesn't make sense. Somebody has faith in the fire as God, and that is fine. You have faith in the fire. Somebody says, I don't see God in that. I see God in the poor people. I want to go serve them. Good. If that's your God, Mahatma Gandhi said that. He said, my Hari is Harijan. I see God in the poor people and I want, wonderful, nothing wrong with that. But if somebody has faith in that idol and by worshipping that idol, people can reach the highest. And people have done that. Actually, there are stories of people who just took an ordinary piece of stone from the riverbank, put it there, cleaned it, and worshipped it day and night, and the Lord appeared in that stone. So just to say that this, not to understand that there is one consciousness which can be invoked. It can be invoked in that idol. So that understanding, so that it is a matter of individual faith. As I said, somebody might say, I can see him as the all-pervading consciousness that is there in space. Very good. If you can do that, that's wonderful. A lot of us are not able, don't have that subtle vision. He can say, when I see the moon rising, when I see the sun rising, I see the flowers blooming, I see the birds chirping, I can remember God. Well, great. Whatever reminds you of that highest consciousness is okay. It is like a child in the beginning, you know, he needs a walker to walk. After a while, he said, I don't need the walker. I can walk and run on my own. Then the mother is not going to say, oh, you know, no, you have to use the walker. No, he has outgrown it. So similarly, worshipping the idol should not make you fanatical. See, the other problem is that when people start worshipping an idol, then they say, this idol alone is real, all others are false. Krishna alone is God, you know, Shiva, Mother Durga is not, Jesus is not. So that breeds fanaticism. Yeah, Jesus is the way, that is true. He is the way, and that's what the Bible says. But then to say that Jesus alone is the way, and anybody else who believes in any other God should be killed, that is fanaticism. Or like some people say, Allah alone is the way. Muslims are the only one. Everybody else is a non-believer, should be killed, should be destroyed. There should be jihad. So seeing the idol as a representative of that infinite consciousness, one should then extend one's thinking that everything is that one consciousness. And he is there everywhere. He appears in different forms. He is limitless. You know, that's why they say in we have the Sahasranam. We have 1,000 names of Vishnu, 1,000 names of Shiva, 1,000 names of Mother Durga. Why? Because each one of them is countless. In fact, even the Quran, even though the Quran says that Allah alone is real, but there is a line in the Quran. He says, Allah ke lakh naam. God has 100,000 names, not even 1,000 names, 100,000 names. So when there are 100,000 names of Allah, then how can you say Allah alone is right? So that is called fanaticism. That is called not understanding your own religion. And that is the problem. When people don't understand, so God calls them Buddha, calls them foolish, because they see only that one little symbol and focus upon it. So that is why he says that remember me, but remember me as not only in that symbol, but as the consciousness everywhere. But using that symbol, and some people continue to worship that symbol even when they realize the truth. Ramakrishna Paramhans was a great saint, and he could see God everywhere. He used to worship the Mother Goddess. And it was so interesting, he could see the Mother Goddess everywhere. When people came and asked him, they said, have you seen God? He says, yeah, I see God more clearly than I see you. He could see the Mother Goddess everywhere. But interestingly, one very interesting thing happened in his life. After he realized the truth, and he had become one with that Mother Goddess, he would stand in front of the statue, and instead of putting a garland on her neck, he would put a garland on his neck. Instead of offering, you know, we offer food to the God, he would offer it to himself and eat it. Why? Because me and God are one. An interestingly thing happened in him that when he had realized the truth, then he found that all religions are same. So one time a Christian padri came and told him, priest, you know, Christianity alone is real. He said, is it true? He said, yeah. So he learned from him how to become a Christian father. And for many months, he was wandering and talking about Jesus. Another time, a Muslim priest came to him and told him, no, don't practice this. Practice Islam. He said, what does Islam say? Islam says, Allahu Akbar. He said, really? Okay. So he started dressing like a Muslim and he wandered around saying, Allahu Akbar. And then third time, a Vedantim came and he said, no, you should not worship these symbols. You know, God, see God everywhere in all consciousness. He said, really? Okay. So he started seeing. So the point is that for a realized master, it doesn't matter. You know, all are one. And that is why these priests have universal love for everybody. It is you and me who distinguish, you know, that is my friend, that is my enemy. This is my religion and that is your religion. You know, this is my church and that is your temple. This is my book and that is not my book. For them, it is no difference. And that's why they say, read the lives of saints. Just pick up books and just read the lives and you'll get so much inspiration because they had so much universal love for all beings. So that is the second way. One is, you know, seeing the consciousness as not only human, but the Lord himself. Second is that this idol represents the ideal. And the third way to interpret this shloka is to see myself as the consciousness. Manushim tanum ashritam. He says, don't think of yourself as this human body. Because this human body is a manifestation of that divinity. Param bhavam ajanantah. Do not see only your lower aspect. Because as we said, the Lord has two aspects. One is the visible prakriti. Other one is the Purush, the consciousness. Purush does not mean man, it means consciousness. So in me also there are both. Whether I'm a man or a woman, I have both. I have prakriti and I have consciousness. So each and every one of us is a manifestation of the reality. We are all equally divine. It is not that Tukaram was more divine or Jesus was more divine or Mirabai or Ramakrishna Paramahansa. Yeah, they were all very divine because they had understood the fact that they are the divinity. We have not understood it because we are still under the influence of the vasanas, under the influence of our negative tendencies. And who created these vasanas? God did not create them. I myself, out of my ignorant actions, repeated actions, like we had talked one time before, a child starts smoking. He has one cigarette, two cigarettes, three cigarettes, and soon he becomes a chain smoker. He's smoking two packs a day. So who created that smoking vasana? He can say, well, society did. You know, the children encouraged me to smoke. Yeah, they did, but then it was up to you. Somebody starts, you know, drinking. Okay, I have only on weekends. You know, I have a beer or when I'm at a party. That's good. If you want to do that and you have a little fun, but then they start extending it to every day. You know, every day I must have two pegs. I must have two or three drinks to relax. And soon they become alcoholics. They have liver problems, all kind of health problems. So who created that alcoholic vasana? Did God create it? No, I create my own vasanas. I create my own desires. And then if the desires are so strong, then we even carry them to the next life. These vasanas get transmitted. That's why they say do not have too many strong desires of these negative types. Because if you have them, then you not only they stay with you in this lifetime, but you carry them with you. So get rid of these negative tendencies, these bad habits, and try to live your life, you know, free of too many likes and dislikes, wants and desires. Because we all have, you know, these desires and these wants and these negative tendencies. Each and every one of us has them. That is why we were born. But through right knowledge, you can reduce them through service, through love of God, and through right knowledge, you can reduce your negative tendencies, your vasanas. And once you reduce them, then you will realize that this consciousness is already with us. God is in me, but I do not see him because of my vasanas that I myself created. Nobody created them. God did not create them. I myself created them. So even though I am divine, but I do not see the consciousness because of my negative tendencies. So the consciousness is hidden in us as if, and hidden by my tendencies. Talking about hidden, it's a beautiful story. When God was creating this universe, right? So he created everything, you know, animals, birds, plants, fish. So he made this beautiful Garden of Eden, beautiful earth, which was perfect, which was complete. And then he put man in there. So the earth as if was prepared for the arrival of this wonderful creature called man. And so man and women were created. And it is said the man was created in his own image. So God created man with the idea that this is the only being that can reach me. See, man is the only being that has an intellect. And once I have an intellect, I can, with the right knowledge, reach that consciousness that is God. So the question came, now man is very intelligent, all right, but now he has to be given life. He has to be given consciousness. So where should we place this consciousness, this God? Where can we? Because God or the consciousness has to be placed somewhere, right, for the whole universe to function. It has to be placed in somewhere. So they said, you know, why don't we place it in heaven? We'll place the consciousness in heaven, and that with that power of the consciousness, this whole world will be illumined, will be illumined. So the whole world can function. Plants can grow, animals can breed, humans can work. They said, no, don't put him up in heaven, up in the sky, up in space. They said, why? I said, well, man is very intelligent, you know. And what he will do, he will make spaceships and go up into space. And then there he will pollute heaven too. You know, like he has polluted the earth with all this, you know, destruction, overpopulation. He will overpopulate heaven. Heaven will have billions of people and there will be no space. And then he will create all dirt and, you know, industries and, you know, all this. He will destroy all the ozone layers and everything. So don't put him in heaven. Okay, don't put this consciousness in heaven. Okay, then let's put him at the bottom of the earth, deep down, you know. He said, no, you don't know him. He'll start making holes. And there will be holes in Russia and China and India and US, and there'll be deep holes and they'll be going deeper and deeper. We can't put consciousness, can't put him in space, can't put God in earth. So where can we put him? So somebody, Brahmaji, came up with a beautiful idea. He said, put him in his heart. Put God in his heart, because he'll never look there. You know, we are always looking outside. You know, in the Upanishad, there is a very beautiful line. It says, Paranchik Khani Vyatrinath Swayambhu Tasmat Paran Pashyati Na Antaratmana. Swayambhu, the self-created Lord, made the Paranchikhani Vyatrinath. He made these sense organs capable of looking outside. The eyes can see, the ears can hear, the nose can smell, and so on. So he made the sense organs to look outside. Tasmat Paran Pashyati. That's why the human is always looking outside. Paran, outside, Pashyati. Na antaratmana, does not look within. And so he says, this is the best place for God to hide. Put the consciousness in his heart, because he'll never find it. And that is our condition. God is right with us. He is with us constantly. And I say, have you seen God? Have you seen God? Where is God? I don't see God. Then we go to Allah, you know, Mecca, or we go to Jerusalem, or we go to Kailash, or we go to Badrinath. That's wonderful, you know, going to these pilgrimage places is good, because there everybody is there with that spiritual attitude. And when you meet other spiritual aspirants, your own spiritual knowledge gets strengthened. So it is wonderful. But then to go to Mecca or Jerusalem or to Badrinath and see God there, and then not see God in the neighbor and mistreat somebody or your family member. So that is what they say, that see the consciousness everywhere. He's there in all beings equally. So love everybody. So that's why he says, Param Bhavam Ajanatata. They do not know me as the Bhuta Maheshwar, as the Lord of all beings. And only see a person as a human body, that this is the body, I have to exploit it, I have to, this is my servant, I should use him and get the maximum benefit. He's my employee. So I abuse him, mistreat him. No, when a person is dependent on you, you have to see the God in them. Yeah, they, of course, the people have to do different jobs. An employee cannot become an employer. Yeah, they do their various jobs, but do not forget that there is one consciousness is there in all beings. And that is the essence of this beautiful shloka, that even though I created the world, even though I am present in the world, but do not just see me as the body, but remember the consciousness. This is very, very powerful. There is a lot more we can talk about. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinah, Sarve Santu Niramayah, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchit Dukha Bhag Bhavet. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.